Good afternoon, calling State Affairs to order at 4:11 p.m. Thursday, April 14. We're in the Max Kernberg Room of the Alaska Capitol. Members present from my left to my right, Representatives Vance, Kaufman, Eastman, Story, Klayman, and myself, Chair Christ Tompkins, gives us 6 of 7 members present, therefore a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Sophia and Talia for helping facilitate today's meeting, and Jeff, our fearless committee aide, for making this committee function on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. We have 3 items on today's agenda, and we'll be looking to take action on all 3 items on the agenda, committee action, that is. Before we get to the first item, House Bill 412, I want to restate some amendment deadlines for the committee's reference. For House Bill 271 on ADA membership and responsibilities, we will be, actually, I'm not going to set that amendment deadline because I think we're going to have a CS, and I just want to see what the turnaround from legal on the CS is. So scratch that, but on Senate Bill 161, political party definition, Senator Wielkowski's bill, please submit your amendments to legal by Tuesday at 5 p.m. and submit to my office by Wednesday at 5 p.m. And if that is an imposition in terms of turnaround time or anything, as always, please just reach out to me and we can try to accommodate as best we can. So that takes us to the first item on today's agenda, and let the record reflect that Representative Tarr joined us at 4:13. The first item is House Bill 412. This is committee legislation relating to Permanent Fund Corporation and ADA board confirmation by the legislature. This is the second hearing. There was an amendment deadline noticed, and unless there are any questions for my staff, Sandy Borseth, we can go right to amendments. Seeing no questions, we will go to amendments. I have 2 amendments. So I am going to go ahead and move amendment number 1, which is drafting work order number B.1.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. And I might call Ms. Borseth up to speak to amendment number 1 briefly.
Hello, everyone. Zanny Borseth, staff representative, Christ Tompkins, for the record, through the chair, representative. Well, all of you, thank you for hearing this bill again. So amendment B1 affects page 3, line 4. It changes the effective date from January 1st, 2023 to September 1st, 2022 to avoid the scenario in which the new or reelected governor appoints new board members to APFC or ADA before the effective date without the requirement of confirmation by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. So it's an unlikely scenario, but we rolled it back just in case.
Mr. Chairman, I remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to amendment number 1? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number 1 is adopted. That takes us to amendment 2, work order number B.2, and I will move amendment number 2.
Object for discussion.
There's an objection. Ms. Borseth.
Zanny Borseth, staff to Representative Chris Tompkins. So amendment B2 addresses the concerns raised by House State Affairs Committee members in the last committee meeting to reduce ambiguity that both APFC and ADA board members who are reappointed shall be confirmed by a majority of the members in the legislature in joint session. So on page 1, or page 3, line 1, amendment B.2 deletes ADA, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, and inserts authority, which is consistent with AS 4488-900. And then it inserts a new subsection on page 3 after line 2, which reads, on or after the effective date of this act, members of the authority who are reappointed, that's the keyword, under AS 4488-30A, as amended by Section 4 of this Act, shall be confirmed by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. And then finally, Amendment B.2 reletters the final subsection of Section 5 on page 3 and adds the definition of authority with the meaning given in the ADA statute AS 4488-900.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. So since the definition of authority isn't included in the bill, could you please provide us, just read the definition of authority that we're referring to, which is listed in AS44.88.900.
88.900. Yeah, so 44.88.900 defines authority to mean the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, which is created by Chapter 4488.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions on amendment number two?
I will withdraw my objection.
And I'll withdraw my objection.
Hearing both objections withdrawn, is there any further objection to adoption of amendment number two? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number two is adopted. And that concludes the amendments that were submitted for House Bill 412. I also want to add my thanks to Representative Story for her attention to detail, which helped generate amendment number two, and Representative Eastman, whose contributions generated amendment number one. So that takes us back to the bill as a whole. Are there any questions for Ms. Borseth or also those available online, including Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal, or Pauline Swanson, Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, from the committee? Seeing none, that takes us to final comments. Are there any comments on House Bill 412? Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate this version. I know we have other legislation to consider some of these issues in different ways. I do think this could be a potential path forward. The one thing I wanted to say, and perhaps I can work with folks in the next committee of referral, is I missed my amendment opportunity, but on page 2 in the section that starts on in the lines 11 through 15, and it talks about if a vacancy occurs while the legislature is not in session, that the governor may appoint an interim board member who shall exercise the powers of the board until the next session of the legislature, at which time the name of the interim board member shall be presented for appointment. And I think the other section just deals with it a little bit differently, is it as spelled out. But what I am interested in is limiting the length of time in which someone can serve in an interim appointment capacity. So for example, we typically do our confirmation joint hearing at the end of the legislature. So if someone were appointed, say, in May because the legislature adjourned, that would give them the opportunity to serve until the following May when we have a joint session. I am interested in truncating that timeline in a way that would require a joint session to happen earlier in the session for those interim appointments so that they're serving less time in an unconfirmed capacity and able to make decisions. And the reason I even thought of this is we saw this happen with the Board of Fisheries, where there were appointments made after the legislature adjourned, and then the unconfirmed members were able to participate in several meetings and make important decisions before there had been scrutiny over their participation as a board member. So I apologize that I was not on top of it to get that amendment done today, but I did want to get that concern on the record in case anyone else shares that concern, and just as something that I might be looking in the next committee of referral to work with. And as the bill sponsor, I've already spoke with you about that, but apologies that I was not able to get an amendment off ready today.
Any further comments, Representative Klayman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to move the bill forward. I would just note, in because of the unique, not wholly unique, but in the large, in this compared to a lot of other appointments, these two boards are ones that have some degree of independence, at least in concept, from the executive branch as well as the legislative branch. And again, I did not offer an amendment, but I think in some other committees in similar topics, we've discussed the notion of having staggered terms in which the once appointed, the person stays on that term so that any particular governor doesn't actually have the authority to fire all members of the board and reappoint all members of the board. I think that level of longevity and that carryover, I think, is a way to ensure the independence of the board. Not a reason to not move the bill forward, but I do think it's a concept that we should be considering if we're going to be making changes to both of these boards, that I think a second feature to make them more independent is to actually create staggered terms and make it so that the governor loses the authority to remove those members when elected, but instead has to wait until a vacancy comes up, as we do in a number of other bodies or commissions and others that actually have a fairly independent function. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I'm pleased to agree with the comments of both of the members from Anchorage. I think those are great policy proposals. I'd like to see them put into practice. I think with the recent court case dealing with recess appointments and the, you know, ability or inability, as the case is, to just decline by inaction to confirm or to even hold a vote, I think that creates an opportunity now for us to move the confirmation date forward in the legislative process so that there's less time people are serving unconfirmed, and there's no strategy to delay it till the end in hopes that, you know, you run out of time and effectively pull somebody off of a commission or a board because they didn't get confirmed. That's moot now. So I think we're kind of in a new ball game in terms of being able to make some improvements to the whole process. And of course, you know, looking at the independence of these particular boards, the intense public interest in who sits on these boards, I think is something that we should both acknowledge and you know, act on. So I think this bill is a good way of moving that conversation forward. And you know, it also, you know, maybe unintentional, but I think another benefit to moving the confirmation date forward on the calendar is you won't have to, you know, have a conversation I once had with someone who wasn't confirmed because someone, you know, shared information that wasn't accurate on the floor and people voted that person down just because of the inaccurate information. So there wasn't any time to respond because it's at the end of the session and there's no expectation of being able to come back and act on it later in the session. But I think having it at the beginning or towards the beginning of session would discourage people from sharing inaccurate information because it can be, you know, you can have time for the legislature to sort of deal with that information and then have maybe a, if need be, a second day to confirm or not confirm someone. And there's no pressure just to act on something that might just be gossip. So pleased to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And seeing no further comments, I'll just add in closing before we entertain a motion that I think both of the comments on vacancies and staggered terms make a lot of sense to me. And while I hear the question about when we hold our joint session, I'm not quite sure what the right mechanism to address that question is, but I've certainly observed the politics of a lateness of a joint session for confirmation. Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to report House Bill 412, version 32-LS1637-B out of committee as amended with individual recommendations in the accompanying fiscal note. The committee gives legal services the authority to make technical and conforming changes.
And seeing and hearing no objection, the motion carries and House Bill 412 will move from committee and we will circulate the paperwork as we go. Thank you very much, Ms. Borsak. That takes us to the next item on today's agenda, House Bill 251 from Representative Josephson relating to the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. It's the third hearing. We had an amendment deadline and we can go right to amendments, which is easy to summarize because there weren't any. That said, I do actually, forgive me, I'm going out of order. And actually, because there are a lot of people to testify on the piece of legislation that is properly ordered, let's reverse and go as was noticed. So actually, let's go to House Bill 226, Pay Increases for State Attorneys. This is also Representative Josephson bill. And we'll do public testimony before amendments also, I think, out of respect to those who are online to testify or in the room to testify. So at this time, I'm going to open public testimony in House Bill 226. And is there anybody in the room to testify on House Bill 226? Great. You can come forward and put yourself on record and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Certainly. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bailey Wolfstead. I'm from Juneau. and I'm testifying in my personal capacity. I'm a prosecutor in the Office of Special Prosecutions, working in the Rural Prosecutions Unit, Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Grant. Prosecutors in your state are working 60 to 80 hour work weeks, in addition to being on call 24/7 to assist officers in emergency situations and cover court every single holiday. For example, I worked Christmas this last year. We don't get paid for on-call or overtime. The jobs we work take a toll on us. We see sexual assault and abuse, child abuse, homicides, and domestic violence. We live with images of autopsy photos, horrific injuries, and child pornography in our heads. We leave our families. I traveled 78 days last year for work, and I've traveled 35 so far this year. Inflation has increased dramatically since 2015. Anecdotally, in the last few years, I've seen friends and colleagues leave state service to municipalities, Washington, and the federal government, where they have lower caseloads, less stressful work, and are paid significantly more and have pensions. It's been frustrating to sit back and watch the legislature recognize the value of everyone's work except for ours. We've seen SU, GGU, DPS receive significant raises and COLAs, while we've been left behind. Maybe it's because we're not unionized. House Bill 226 does not do enough to keep attorneys and make us competitive. The recruitment and retention crisis is not limited to DPS. Police can do a stellar investigation. The crime lab can provide valuable evidence. And still, the most together they can do is make an arrest or forward charges. It is your prosecutors who argue bail, meet with victims, and present the case for grand jury, perform motion work, try the cases, leading to the end goal of appropriate sentences. We're key players on this team, and without us, public safety isn't addressed. Yet we're leaving in droves because the legislature has not recognized us for our value, and other governments do. I ask now that you pass this bill, but encourage you to dig deeper and to look further, to pass a 40-hour work week, which we're already working, to address on-call pay, to keep our cost of living adjustment and salaries in step and on par with our law enforcement colleagues here in the state, and on a national level. We work so very hard to support Alaska and to keep Alaska safe, and I simply ask that you support us as well and respectfully request that you vote in favor of House Bill 226.
Thank you very much for your testimony. There's a question from Representative Klayman.
Thank you. Part of the discussion we've been having, and I would note that Representative Joseph and I have been pushing for these very increases for years, and we're sorry that it's been less successful, but do you, as a prosecutor, do you also support comparative increases for the public defenders and public advocates?
And again, I'm speaking in my personal capacity.
I understand. I understand you're also professionally.
Absolutely. They're also leaving it rope. And the thing is, when you see a public defender or public advocate leave, what that does is that puts your case back by months. And that does not help anyone. That doesn't help your victims. That doesn't help law enforcement. That doesn't help the criminal justice system, which is slowed any time someone leaves and a new person has to come in, get involved in the case. It costs more money all around for everyone because there's more hearings, there's more travel to meet with people, more things that need to get done. And I absolutely support it for them as well.
Follow up. Only other query, when we, not this bill, but we had a similar to going on about how we had bonuses for the Attorney General's office, but not for the public defenders and public advocates. So I started getting calls about what about those folks, and part of the comment was, well, if the Attorney General's side of the equation gets increases and the public advocates and the public defenders don't, mm-hmm. you're likely to see even more public defenders and public advocates. Would you concur with that criticism? On your personal level?
Certainly. I think something I really respect about Alaska is that we do have pay parity between prosecutors and public defenders and public advocates, and I think that's absolutely necessary for a justice system that works. As a prosecutor, I can tell you that cases go smoother when I have opposing counsel who are good at their job and who know how to do their job and who have been in their job for a long time. When we see these consistent new people coming in on both sides, what you often see is we get overzealous. I mean, I was the same way as a young prosecutor, right? You come in, you're excited about this new job, your eyes are open to the world, and you are overzealous, and it takes more time to do everything. And so I certainly think that the recruitment and retention problem isn't limited. I'm seeing it in my colleagues across the aisle. I'm seeing it, certainly I feel it more in my own office, and in the additional coverage that we've got to provide, and the additional, again, for me, the additional time traveling and things like that for my specific job, but I think it should be across the board.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify.
Thank you for your time.
Next in the room, Laura Johansson. Welcome. Go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in two or three.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Johansson. I am an assistant public advocate in Juneau, and I'm testifying in my personal capacity. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 226 as a starting point to achieve greater retention. I have practiced indigent defense for just under 8 years. I've practiced in Western Alaska, on the Kenai Peninsula, in Seattle, Washington, and now in Juneau. I want to talk specifically about the impact lawyer turnover and retention issues have on Alaskan families who come into contact with OCS and are experiencing a child in need of aid case. Child in need of aid cases at their core are an opportunity for parents who have been found to be unfit by the court to correct the parental deficiencies which led to their children being placed in out-of-home care. An attorney assists the parent in accessing needed services and advocating for their children to exit the foster care system and be reunited with their family as quickly as possible. However, with indigent defense turnover, a parent or a child may go through several attorneys, setting their case back months each time before they are able to reach their goal of exiting the foster care system. The Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997 set federal timelines on the length of time parents have to correct the parental deficiencies and reunify with their children. That length of time is 15 months. Every time a new attorney is assigned, that case goes back at least 3 months, at least, while the new attorney gets up to speed on the family, their needs, and the resources available in that family's community. Every time an attorney is reassigned because of retention issues, it actually makes it less likely that that child will be able to go home with their family in the amount of time mandated by federal law. I support House Bill 226 in order to achieve an orderly administration of child in need of aid proceedings as required by federal law and to protect Alaskan families' right to a competent, experienced, and vigorous defense to ensure that children are able to come home the second it is safe for them to do so. In this way, retention of state attorneys is actually a public health issue, and I urge you to pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Klayman.
Because in your professional experience, you've worked both in Washington State and Alaska. Can you discuss a little bit of your experience with the pay equality or disparity between Washington State and Alaska? And also, if you can tell us a little bit about the reasons why you're in Alaska to the extent that there is a significant pay disparity.
I'd be happy to, sir. So I started on the public defender in 2015. In 2018, I left Alaska and I worked for the King County Department of Public Defense in Seattle, Washington as assistant public defender. And the pay, it wasn't just the pay, the benefits, the pension was incredible. People will say, oh, well, you're down in Seattle. The housing market is so much bigger. No, I made more money dollar for dollar down in King County. And I had a pension. And my health benefits were better. And my leave was better. And my caseload was significantly better. And I mean, when we were on call, we got paid for that. I mean, it just doesn't even come close. I'm back because I love it here. And I want to be here. And I care about the families that are here and that I can serve. I am from Anchorage. This is my home. Whether or not I stay in state service is up to all of you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify.
Thank you. Have a great day.
There's a late coming question, Representative Tarr.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, not really a question, but just for both of the women that joined us this afternoon, thank you so much for the work that you're doing for the state. And I have no doubt it takes a toll on you. And I know I'm not alone in this, but just want to publicly say how much I appreciate how hard you work for the state. And I hope we'll be able to advance this legislation and show, you know, that commitment through our work as well.
Thank you so much.
And a question or a comment from Representative Eastman.
Yes, and I just wanted to say, you know, thanks on behalf of the state is one thing. I'll just offer thanks on behalf of the kids that aren't being delayed from reunification from the service of yourself and others who are staying in those positions under difficult circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you. They're very important.
Thank you very much. And next in the room is Kevin Higgins. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kevin Higgins. I am here in my own personal capacity. I work in the Civil Division of the Department of Law. Urge you to pass House Bill 226, but I also urge you to amend it so that the increases take effect in 2022, not in 2023. There's no reason to delay the increase. It will set us back in our problems with retention and recruitment. This is not going to be a quick fix to build up the loss that we've had on our bench. As Representative Justin testified on March 31st, there was Department of Law statistics that 93 attorneys have left since 2018. We have 143 positions in the Civil Division. In the last 2 weeks, the Civil Division has also, I've learned, lost two more very experienced, very good attorneys. As the women colleagues here have testified, and as Anchorage Prosecutor Betsy Bull testified in front of the Senate State Affairs Committee on Tuesday, these problems exist in the Criminal Division as well. I have colleagues in the Office of Public Advocacy, one is here, and we have colleagues in the Public Defender Agency. This is omnipresent. Like the other people who have testified, I love my job. I love working at the Department of Law. But shame on me for thinking that my job would love me back if I simply went about the business of lawyering. In Senate State Affairs, Senator Schauer explained that he's a union member in his other job and the benefits that that gets him. Just shy of 50 years ago, the legislature passed the Public Employment Relations Act, finding that granting rights to collectively bargain was the best way to harness and direct the energies of public employees that are eager to have a voice in determining their conditions of work. May Day is around the corner. The season of labor is here. My feeling in listening to my colleagues is that we are eager. Please pass House Bill 226 with increases effective on July 1st, 2022. Hopefully this is the last time that pay increases will for Alaska State public lawyers will be in front of you as a bill like this. And hopefully the next time we'll be here asking you to approve the monetary terms of our collective bargaining agreement. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't think there's anybody else in the room to testify. Thank you very much, the three of you, for being here in person and for your service at the state. Online, we have a number of testifiers. We'll start with Gustav Olson in Kodiak. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, and sponsoring representatives Joseph and Clayman and Fields, my name is Gustav Olson. I am the district attorney here in Kodiak Island. I'm appearing today in my private capacity as a citizen to testify to you before in support of House Bill 226. I'm a career prosecutor. I began working as an intern with the U.S. Attorney's Office as an assistant to Attorney Stephen Cooper in Fairbanks in 2001. I then worked with currently sitting federal judge Timothy Burgess at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage in 2002. After I passed my bar in 2003, I began working as a municipal prosecutor under the Baggage Administration in Anchorage. In the spring of 2006, I began my career with the Department of Law. I first served as a line prosecutor, then a special prosecutor with the Attorney General's Office as an Office of Special Prosecution, and finally as a supervising prosecutor at the Violent Crime Unit in Anchorage. In 2017, I was appointed by the Attorney General to be the Kodiak District Attorney, and that's the position I retain today. Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to talk to you, not just anecdotally, but about the personal individuals that I have worked with through my time with the Department of Law that are no longer with the Department of Law. Since 2006, more than a dozen of my good friends and highly skilled prosecutors in the criminal division have left, specifically because of the disparity and the pay and benefits and lack of incentive to remain employed with the department. Just 2 days ago, a colleague of mine informed me that Friday was her last day with the department. She told me that I could look at her salary of unionized pay, scheduled pay raises, performance bonuses, and defined retirement package with the Washington State website with the agency which she'd be moving to. She will be missed, and I told her that. However, I don't fault her for leaving, and I wished her the very best. Washington State will gain an extremely gifted and well-trained litigator at the expense of over 10 years of investment, experience, and training provided by the Department of Law. This story is all too common. I ask you, as members of this committee, to pass and advance House Bill 226. This is the first step to give us parity across the board, both in the prosecution side, as well as the defense side and the civil arena, so that we can retain individuals who are highly skilled and trained, who the department has invested in some over a decade, and prevent this hemorrhaging of experienced litigators. The roles that we play are essential to the criminal justice system, and we cannot give new untrained attorneys the type of caseloads that these individuals are leaving. And what that does is that compounds those of us who are in the land of 15 to 20 years, our caseloads, and at some point in time, people are just going to say, I'm sorry, this is the last sexual assault, this is the last child porn, this is the last homicide I can handle, and I will find somewhere else to go where these types of caseloads are less tenable. So I would ask you to support House Bill 226, and I thank you for your time in hearing me.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. I'm being a little loose on the two-minute limit, although I think for committees and testifiers' reference, we're sort of in a sticky wicket in that it's the intent to move this legislation today. We're also going to need to gavel out no later than 5:25, so just something for us to be mindful of. We can also bring this bill back in a future committee, and we do have two amendments to consider. So I might try to be a little bit more of a stickler at the two-minute limit, although I think the impact of the testimony is great and very, very much appreciated. So just trying to figure out how to balance these considerations. Next, we have Matthew Stinson in Anchorage. If you're with us, Mr. Stinson, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony.
Hello, this is Matthew Stinson. I am a state prosecutor. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. Thank you to everyone here for hearing us out and allowing us to testify. I strongly encourage this body to pass HB 226. I encourage it because it's appropriate, because, frankly, state attorney salaries, and this speaking in my personal capacity, not in my professional capacity, but as a private citizen who has a job with the state of Alaska, I have seen both my colleagues I work with directly, colleagues on the defense side, civil attorneys, people I've had conversations with, and it's similar across all the board. There's been a steady increase in hours worked without the same kind of corresponding steady increase in pay. There's been an adapting private sector to inflation. There's been a stagnant public sector in the face of inflation. And it's just been important, as I've already seen a significant amount of turnover in my time with the state, that salaries just need to track and need to keep up. I see very, very impassioned, skillful work from defense attorneys, public defenders, OPA, state attorneys, but it's just very difficult for people to stay in these positions when there are other opportunities outside that have better pay and a lower burden in their lives, either in the state of Alaska or outside of the state of Alaska. So I thank you all for your time. I'll try to keep this brief, and I urge you to pass this. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Stinson, for your testimony. Next, we have Ryan Bravo in Anchorage. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes. And Mr. Bravo may no longer be available, so we'll move on to Betsy Bull in Anchorage. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Betsy Bull, and I'm here in my personal capacity representing myself. I'm a prosecutor here in Anchorage, and I prosecute sexual assault, sexual abuse crimes, and I'm the supervisor of the domestic violence unit here. I support House Bill 226 as a starting point for making the state of Alaska competitive as an employer. The Department of Law, as is the Department of Administration, are employers that compete in the free market. Currently, the market demands competitive pay and benefits. We must compete for talented attorneys so that we can keep our community safe. We face a monumental task in doing so with far fewer resources than we have ever had. Currently, our office has 9 prosecutor openings. What that means is that all of our other attorneys must do the job of their positions plus 9 unfilled positions. The burden that places on already underpaid, overworked attorneys and their staff is immeasurable. I posit this rhetorical question to you, which is, which offer would you accept? One from an employer with a starting salary that's 20% higher, with a pension, with the same amount of leave, with sick leave, with maternity and paternity leave, with compensation for overtime, with an 80% reduction in caseload, with a yearly cost of living increase, and merit increases? Or would you accept the Department of Law's current offer to our employees? No pension, far lower starting salaries than most prosecutors' offices, no sick leave, no maternity leave, no paternity leave, no compensation for overtime, no compensation for hours worked on weekend duty, staggering caseloads on average of over 200 felonies per attorney, required on duty 24/7, 7 days a week for several weeks out of the year, and no cost of living increase since 2015. The answer is obvious, and that is what has led to our recruitment and retention problems. Our offers are not competitive in the market. Our ability to recruit and retain is limited to the tools that you give us. This salary increase would be one of those tools. Please allow us to compete in the market so we can keep our communities safe and so that we can begin to compensate our attorneys for the work that they do and the sacrifices that they make. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bull. There's a question from Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Ms. Bull. Just narrowly, you mentioned 9 openings. Is that 9 openings in the Anchorage office, 9 openings statewide, or 9 openings in the sexual abuse and assault unit?
Thank you, Representative Clayman. That is 9 openings just in the Anchorage District Attorney's Office. For reference, I've been on the sexual assault unit since 2018. Since that time, I am the only person that has remained in the unit. All others have left. I've had 6 supervisors in those 4 years, all leaving for better paying jobs.
And then the only other question is how many positions in the Anchorage Prosecutor's Office?
I believe that there are approximately 35 positions. I'll have to double check that. It's 38. Excuse me, I got confirmation. There are 38 positions, 9 are unfilled.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify. Next in the queue, Laura Jungreis. Apologies for any mispronunciation. If you can hear us, go ahead, put yourself on record and present your testimony in 2 or fewer minutes.
Thank you. My name is Laura Jungreis. I am an assistant district attorney in the Anchorage office, and I'm testifying today in my private capacity. This is an issue that has taken on special and terrifying types of importance recently. My fiance recently lost his job in February. He was the primary earner, was making close to double what I make in this office, and now I am the sole earner for our household. We do have some savings, but given our current situation, I do not know what our financial future is going to look like. Making me solely responsible for the following list, which is only some of our expenses. The mortgage for our home, which we are lucky enough to own, including the taxes and insurance, responsible for groceries. I am responsible for our dog care and food. I am responsible for the gas for our cars. I am responsible for all other expenses, expected and otherwise. And quite frankly, in August, when it's expected that we're going to have to start paying back our student loans, I'm unsure how we're going to survive. I previously worked in the private sector. I work here because I care about my community and public safety. It is an important and critical job, and I love the work that I do. I know people who have quit this job within 2 months because they are unable, of starting because they cannot survive on a safe salary. That is something I find myself contemplating, and every day
Excuse me. I find myself asking, can I continue to afford working here? Can my family survive if I continue to work here? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Moving next in the queue, we have, I think this is a Polish last name. I'll try. Diana Kaneta-Weiss in Anchorage. If you can hear us, thank you for taking the time to testify. Please put yourself on record and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for hearing all of our testimony today. My name is Assistant District Attorney Diana Knazowicz, and I'm here testifying in my personal capacity. I love my job, and it's the only job I ever wanted to do since I was 10 years old. I am coming here before you today in support of this bill, which honestly, I believe falls woefully short for what the amount of effort, love, care, and hard work all of my colleagues, either in the DA's office across the aisle with the public defender's office or the Office of Public Advocacy. Everybody who works as a public servant lawyer is doing it for the betterment of their community. And I'm not a lifelong Alaskan. I chose to make Alaska, and specifically Anchorage, my community. I'd like to stay a lifelong Alaskan. But to be quite honest, since I've started, my partner has asked me to leave this job every single month because we are not paid for what we do, not adequately. I know that there is a lot of things that go into the budget and it's complicated, but what I think all of the testimony here today provides you is context that these are the people who are ensuring that our criminal justice system, a foundation of our nation and of this state, something that we should be taking pride in. We can't do it if no one's willing to acknowledge how hard it is and are not able to allow us to do basic things like make a decision of whether or not you can buy a special bottle of wine on a night. Those decisions are luxuries that we don't have. And I, beyond luxuries, as Ms. Young-Rice testified, it also comes down to just the reality. I had a medical procedure last October that cost me over 85% of my monthly income. That's devastating. That is absolutely devastating. And it's unfair. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And moving next in the queue, Nolan Oliver in Anchorage. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm testifying today in my private capacity. I'm a prosecutor in the Anchorage office. I urge you to pass this bill. I urge you to make it effective immediately. I urge you to increase the amount that is in the bill. I could echo every statement that you've heard so far, both in what it affects my colleagues in this office, in statewide district attorney's office, and across the aisle with the public defender's office, conversations with them. In an effort to be brief, I'll try to provide new information that I don't believe others have already touched on. Some have talked about the other benefits that we don't get even as part of this. Previously in subcommittee, Deputy Attorney General Skidmore provided a study that said that what our kind of the number that our fair pay should be for a starting prosecutor in today's market. That number would require a 34% pay increase to bring us on par in pay alone. That's not counting that we aren't pensioned, that our other benefits are not the same as other positions. One of those benefits that's been mentioned is the additional duties that we have to do. In addition to generally clocking in probably about 60 hours a week, 80 or more hours whenever we're heading to a trial or in trial, we also have to be on duty. We're on call 24/7. We have to work the full weekend. full days, both days. We get no additional monetary compensation for that. That is for, in the Anchorage office, at least 2 weeks a year. Some people, it is substantially more. I know one of my colleagues that was effectively on call for 22 weeks out of the year, about 42% of the year for no additional monetary compensation. As part of those on duty for assaults and sexual assault, homicide duty, you go out and you are talking to detectives, you're talking to treatment providers, you're working directly with them, counseling them, trying to help the investigation. When we are in that room providing information, doing our job, we have the lowest starting salary out of any of the people in the room. I believe I'm about at my 2 minutes, so thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Oliver, for your testimony. Next in the queue, Whitney Bostick in Anchorage. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in 2 or fewer minutes.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm testifying today in my personal capacity in support of House Bill 226 as the first step. Let me repeat that. The first step in addressing the pay disparity to those of our colleagues across the nation. I've been an assistant district attorney in the Anchorage office for almost 3 years now. For the 10 years preceding that, I was in private practice. I left private practice because domestic violence was something I saw regularly in my career as a family law attorney, and I saw how rampant it was in our community, and I wanted to do more. So I became a DV prosecutor. I've been prosecuting DV crimes for over 2 years. And I have, in that time period, consistently had over 200 cases. That's not misdemeanor cases. Those are predominantly felony cases. Class C felonies, Class B felonies, Class A felonies. Those cases take time. And when you multiply them by the quantity, I'm not able to fully address what needs to be addressed in those cases because there are just not enough hours in the day. You've heard from my colleagues that we're regularly working more than 40 hours a week. Because when you have over 200 cases, you cannot fulfill the bare minimum requirements of what you have to do in those cases in 40 hours a week. And during the 3 years that I've been in the Anchorage office, I've watched talented and experienced attorneys leave the state for other jobs in other states because they get paid better, they get better benefits, they get pensions. Again, they get pensions and they have lower caseloads. It makes them better prosecutors and better at prosecuting those cases because they have the lower caseloads. They're able to devote their attention in detail to those cases. Our salaries haven't received a COLA adjustment since 2015. And during that time, the cost of living has exponentially increased. Attorney twos in our office can't even afford the median house cost in Anchorage. A $400,000 house, you would not qualify to purchase it as an attorney to you in our office. Also, we're not drawing new attorneys to the state. Alaska doesn't have a law school. We have to import attorneys from other states. And when those attorneys can stay in their home states, make more, and have a better work-life balance, why would they come here? This just feeds into a vicious cycle of retention and recruitment that won't solve it. And when we lose attorneys, the attorneys that are here take on more. The reason my caseload is as high as it is not because of the COVID backlog entirely. It's because attorneys have routinely left our office and those cases have to go somewhere because we aren't hiring people at a rate that to replace them to be able to bring in and lower my caseload.
Ms. Bostick, I might ask if you can summarize your testimony.
That's it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for taking the time to testify. Next in the queue, Brittany Dunlop in Anchorage. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in 2 or fewer minutes.
Hi. Good afternoon. I want to thank the bill sponsors and the chairman for having this hearing. I'm calling in my personal capacity. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, a 16-year career prosecutor, and I'm currently serving as the Anchorage District Attorney. From the last few minutes of testimony, I think you can tell that I've clearly hired some good advocates in the Anchorage District Attorney's Office. I was hired in June of 2006, so I'm keenly aware that anybody after me does not share the same retirement and benefits packages. The lawyers that work in my office are hardworking, thoughtful, and civic-minded public servants. None of them are doing it to get rich. They work night and day to protect our community because being a prosecutor is a calling, but they deserve to be compensated fairly. I have spent more time in my time as the district attorney in the last 2 years hiring, recruiting, and training than I have done almost anything else. A couple of numbers that you might not have heard from Mr. Skidmore's presentation. In the Anchorage office right now, we have approximately 100 open homicide cases. There are currently 4 lawyers here who have tried one of lead counsel before. We have only one Tier 4 lawyer that has been here more than 5 years. So as you're considering additional bills in the future, pensions have to be a part of it. But the pay increase is a good starting step, and I thank you for taking it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify, Ms. Dunlop. Moving next in the queue, Abigail Sazel in Bethel. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in 2 or fewer minutes.
Hello, can everyone hear me?
I can hear you.
Hi, my name is Abby Kazel. I am appearing today in my personal capacity. I am a public defender in Bethel, Alaska, which is the hub community for the YK Delta. It's my utmost privilege to work alongside a number of talented and dedicated colleagues, both at PDA and OPA and at the prosecutor's office at DAO. Since I started in 2020, I've seen multiple wonderful attorneys move on from positions that they would otherwise keep due to pay and workload issues, especially in rural offices whose served populations benefit especially from lawyers who have more experience and a more meaningful connection to the community. Lawyer retention is especially important. My biggest honor to be able to represent my clients. I'm extremely motivated on a personal level to do this work. I believe wholeheartedly in the United States Constitution and the Alaska Constitution and the rights that it affords to indigent criminal defendants. This bill would allow our agency to better retain lawyers who will stick around for longer, which will help me do even better with the work that I do have for my clients who deserve nothing but the most zealous, competent, and well-compensated advocates under the United States and Alaska Constitution. So thank you all very much for your time and listening to all the testimony from both sides of the criminal justice system today.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify. Next in the queue, we have Randall Havens in Anchorage. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in 2 or fewer minutes.
Yes. Thank you. My name is Randall Haven. I am a IT professional here in Alaska. I'm testifying today in my personal capacity. I am not a lifelong Alaskan, but I have been here for many years. I was raised here, and now I'm trying to raise a family here and have a home here in Alaska, and I really hope to keep it for life and stay that way. But in those things that I look for, I'm here to urge you to pass this bill today, and not only pass it, but increase it, make it effective immediately. And it should only be the start. This is not something that can be pushed down the road. I know that in Alaska, we are used to doing more with less resources. It's kind of the Alaskan way, but this is not fresh avocados or cheap shipping. This is law and order. It is a core tenet of a functioning government and something that will be looked for, not just schools and, you know, cheap houses when somebody wants to make their home here and stay here. Our attorneys, as has been testified by others today, routinely see the worst that our society has to offer. It's part of their job. It's what they do. They work rigorous hours in long conditions. I can only speak in my own capacity as an IT professional, but in any skilled profession, you need to pay talent to keep them here, especially in Alaska. As was just brought up, this is not a place that people idly wander by. We don't have law schools. We aren't on a road that you could go down and just pick up new talent. Retention of talent for the state is especially important here, and that's what's at play. We don't want people looking at the state as the second choice, the runner-up. We want the state to be functioning at its top level, and it is definitely not in this current case. Without the retained talent, not only are you punishing those already sacrificing for what they do here, but you diminish the capacity of the state to do its core function.
Mr. Higgins, I may ask if you can summarize your testimony.
That would be the end of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify. And that takes us to our last testifier, Derek Gibson in Juneau. If you can hear us, please go ahead, put yourself on record, and present your testimony in two or fewer minutes.
Certainly. Good afternoon. My name is Derek Gibson. I am here to testify on behalf of myself, and I am testifying in a personal capacity. I was actually over earlier today to testify in person, but I had to leave because I had meetings with victims to attend to. And victims are who I would like to focus on, because you have heard from many prosecutors, and I think that perhaps we might have overlooked the people who are at the core of the reason that I myself participate in this job and that I have stayed in this job. I have been a prosecutor for 6 years. I started out in Bethel, and in that capacity, I was the senior assistant district attorney within 17 months of being in that job, and that was my very first legal job. And being the senior assistant district attorney out there, I worked with a 7-year-old who had been repeatedly sexually abused by her foster father. I worked with her for hours preparing her for grand jury. We went all the way through to sentencing, where she asked to speak as a brave little 7-year-old, as long as I could hold her hand. Now in Juneau, I am the Southeast Sex Crimes Prosecutor for this region, and I regularly and repeatedly meet with victims who are under the age of 10. I meet with them for hours so that I can prepare them for going into a grand jury to testify to 18 strangers, 18 adult strangers, about things that they have endured. I want to be here to see them through to the end of their cases. However, I don't know if I'm going to be able to. With the housing costs rising in Juneau, with my husband's job being lost due to COVID, I have been given multiple offers to move to a different state and do the same work that I'm doing here for more money with a smaller caseload. I am dedicated to these children, and I want to see them through to the end. I want to hold the hand of the 7-year-old and the 9-year-old that I prepared last month for grand jury to talk about their ongoing sexual abuse by their older brother. Please give me the capacity to continue to be able to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And I don't see anyone else in the room. I'm just taking a final pass at the queue online. I don't see anyone, so I'm going to close public testimony at this time. There were two amendments submitted for House Bill 226 by deadline. We have amendment number one, I.1, Representative Thaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After consultation with the bill sponsor, I'm actually going to, I've been asked not to offer either amendment number one or amendment number two so that they can be considered by the Finance Committee, but we can move this bill forward today, so I'm not offering amendment number one.
Okay. And same goes for amendment number two, I.3.
That's correct. I'm not offering amendment number two. Doesn't mean that my lack of support, I just, in to move the legislative process forward, I'm not offering it.
Yes, Representative Eastman.
Yes, I have a conceptual amendment here. Is that going to be something we can take up now?
What's the conceptual amendment?
It was distributed.
Is it Representative Clayman's amendment?
Yeah.
We're at ease. I'm back on the record, and after a little bit of discussion around time and timelines, Representative Clayman?
After further consideration, I now move amendment number one.
I'll object for a very brief introduction and discussion, Representative Clayman.
And I'll refer to the bill sponsor or his staff to speak to amendment number one, although actually I would actually move conceptual amendment number one to amendment number one at first.
Is there any objection to conceptual amendment number one to amendment number one?
Object just so they can be spoken to from the sponsor.
Ms. Sorenberg.
Absolutely. So The change you're going to see to amendment number one is going to be found on page one, lines 14 and 15, and it's adding the words as increased under E and F of that section. The section we're referring to is the section in statute where you find the pay salary schedule. E and F were the updates to that salary schedule that occurred in 14 and 15. The drafter at Legal Services thought it would be safer to include those updates explicitly.
Thank you, Representative Eastman.
And are we increasing the increase in that amendment or not? No?
No, just reflects history.
I remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to conceptual amendment number one to amendment number one? Seeing and hearing none, conceptual amendment number one to amendment number one is adopted. That takes us back to amendment number one is conceptually amended. Representative Klayman, or rather Ms. Sorenberg.
Ms. Sorenberg, please.
Chair Christ-Tompkins and members of the committee, amendment number one was developed in conjunction with the Department of Administration. The Division of Personnel and Labor Relations had some concerns about how the salary schedule and statute is currently written, and if we updated that salary schedule, how that might have some unintended consequences. What this does is it takes out a lot of the technical drafting choices that were made when this bill was first drafted. So it's section 1 through 3 of the bill is primarily what this takes out, and it and those were the sections where the salary schedule was updated to the 2015 amounts, and sections 2 and 3 changed subsections E and F accordingly. It does not change the important part of the bill, which is the 10% raise for state attorneys. It will shorten the bill significantly and make the bill more clear that this is just about pay for state attorneys.
Thank you, Ms. Sorenberg. I will remove my objection to amendment number one as conceptually amended. Is there any further objection? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one is adopted. Representative Klayman.
Move amendment number two.
Amendment number two, which is I.3, has been moved. I'll object for discussion. Representative Klayman.
I'd ask Ms. Sorenberg to explain amendment number two.
Ms. Sorenberg.
Representative Christ-Tompkins and members of the committee, for parity's sake within the Department of Administration, which has 3 divisions employing lawyers, only 2 of which are currently included in the bill before you, the Office of Administrative Hearings is added by this amendment. So this adds employees under AS 39.25.120C20 in order to accomplish this, and this would be administrative law judges, and basically they're having the same recruitment and retention challenges facing both of the department's other divisions and employee attorneys, and they think that maintaining parity is important.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and do I take from that that these administrative law judges likewise aren't protected under a union and fall into the same classification, generally speaking, as the other attorneys we're talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that is correct. They're also partially exempt.
Any additional questions on amendment number two, I.3? Seeing none, I will remove my objection to amendment number two. Is there further objection to amendment number two, I.3? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number two is adopted, and that concludes the amendments for House Bill 226, which takes us back to the bill before us now as amended. Are there any closing comments from members of the committee? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to share that I had intended to offer an amendment to extend this increase to the courts, and unfortunately I got in not by the deadline. So I just wanted to say that because there might have been folks watching wondering why that amendment wasn't offered, but I hope to work with the bill sponsor in the next committee of referral. And I just think it's important for us to be thinking about it because jurisdiction of Department of Public Safety and Department of Corrections falls under this committee. And so when we're thinking about how we improve public safety in Alaska, it's been made very clear, at least to me, that all of these pieces need to be working in unison. And so I think, you know, not considering the courts we could experience some of the same problems that others have been sharing with us about recruitment and retention for those staff. And of course, it's not going to work if we don't have that those folks staffed up as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional comments, Representative Clayman?
I just want to speak specifically. One of the testifiers talked about if we're serious about this pay increase, it's not 10%, it's 34%. And I agree. I also recognize that this hard reality we face today in the state is if we put a bill up that did get the pay increase that we need to serve the public safety function, our odds of passing it are sadly very low. What that says about our commitment to public safety is troubling, but I support the bill. I, to the extent that there's a groundswell within the legislature to make it more than 10%, I'm all on board.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think all of us kind of wish that we had that pot of gold right now because we see this in so many departments, but this one definitely, as some of the testifiers spoke to, is a matter of law and order. And, I was just comparing one of the state's other priorities, and that's being education and teachers. And the Alaskan teacher median salary is more than $68,000. And the starting range for an attorney is $60,000. And yet our teachers don't have to work year-round. They usually will find other employment during the summer. But, how can we neglect this area? And I'm hoping that we can have a robust discussion with a fiscal plan that looks at what we can do and the impact that it will make. And the question that I have for all of us to look at is perhaps looking at the state of Washington, a question that's come to my mind is, do they have the same backlog as we do here in the state with cases? More than half of our inmates are awaiting, their trial and, their cases to be heard. And that's costing us significantly in Department of Corrections. You know, does the state of Washington have that same issue? As we're looking to a comparative, close jurisdiction that is taking our prosecutors, I want to know the impact of if we were to increase our focus on pay and retention on this end, would it save us money on the other end and provide our constitutional mandate of speedy trials? And I think that's something that we don't hear about very much, but that's very much having an impact in our state. And so I'm very interested in this because it's something that the general public probably doesn't talk about, but they feel it without realizing it. And just want to thank the testifiers who are here and all of the people in our Justice Department for the services they do, especially for those who don't have a voice.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I know there's been a number of amendments, but I think the effective date of July 1st, 2023 in Section 5 is still intact in the bill as it leaves the committee. I know that's been a concern that was raised during the committee hearing and also during testimony today, and I'm not sure exactly why we would keep it there. I know we are, but we just want to look at that in the next committee of referral and see if that doesn't line up with what we're trying to do in the rest of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, Chair Christ Tompkins, and I just want to agree with members who have spoke before this. It's very, I want to say it was alarming, it was moving, it was compelling, and I thank everyone for their hard work, and we have a big charge here if we want to be champions of helping our children and families and individuals who go through trauma to not be further traumatized in our system. And I certainly want our employees to feel that they value them through compensation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. I'm cautiously calling on you to see what you have.
I just only want the question raised by Representative Eastman about why do we still have the current effective date? because I was actually skeptical about that in our early committee discussions. And I think Representative Josephson had indicated that because we have bonuses in the current budget that passed the House, and we actually have the Judiciary Committee has a committee bill that, interestingly enough, was referred only to the Finance Committee, but that would do the uncodified law to allow the bonuses in the budget. And while I initially was sort of less than embracing of that approach, I think the reality of getting the bonus is more certain by doing it in the budget rather than seeing whether or not this gets through the whole process this session is a faster way to try to get the money to these hardworking Alaskans this year, and this having this take effect in 2023 is a way to make something happen this year. So while there's a level at which I don't think it's more sausage making than clean and simple, but I kind of have, after watching the process, just as these debates have gone on, I've kind of come to agree with the approach that Rep. Josephson had suggested at an earlier hearing, that we do the bonuses in this year's budget and take this bill up to take effect later.
Thank you for putting that on the record, Representative Klayman. I think as a closing comment before we entertain a motion, that was deeply impactful testimony. I want to offer my heartfelt thanks to everyone who testified, many of whom are listening right now. And I think one of the most important things we can offer is a swift dispensation of justice, and that's being denied Alaskans in all parts of the criminal justice system, as Representative Vance highlighted. In many ways, I think this is maybe the most important thing we can do in terms of improving our criminal justice system, including the victims who suffer from a system that is overworked and stressed and slow. So with that, Representative Klayman, a motion on House Bill 226.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to report House Bill 226, version 32-LS0960/SHI, as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations. In the forthcoming fiscal note, the committee gives Legal Services the authority to make technical and conforming changes.
Seeing and hearing no objection, House Bill 226 moves from committee and advances to the Finance Committee for consideration. I'm going to roll House Bill 251 relating to the Board of Trustees and Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to a future committee hearing. And at 5:24 p.m., we are adjourned.